and welcome to Puffcast, your Harry Potter happy place. This is episode 50 on February 2nd, 2022. I am Melanie.
And I'm Juliana, and happy 50th episode, everyone!
Woohoo!
Pew, 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 pew! And this week, we have an amazing guest. He is a legend. He is our new pod Hufflepuff grandpa. He is an iconic pizza eater. It is David the Hufflepuff from the Hogwarts Tournament of Champions trivia thing that I say wrong every single time. The trivia tournament on TBS where he won.
Yay! Welcome, David!
Yay!
Thank you. But the Hufflepuff team won, all right?
Yes.
Yes, I was maybe the MVP on that team. But this was not a one-person job.
No.
We absolutely would not have won without all three of us in there.
Yeah, you all did so amazingly well. And this is something, because we spoke with Luke already. And
yeah, I heard that.
Yeah, he's such a doll. We love him so much. He made the point, and we observed too, that each of you brought a different element to the team and really just made it such a well-rounded team, which I think is something that is very Hufflepuff, because we're all a little bit mismatched and we're not like the best at any one thing, but we are a good, well-rounded person on the whole. And I feel like you all represented Hufflepuff very well in that capacity and just providing a very well-rounded team.
Oh, yes.
But David, I think the first thing we need to do is have our listeners know a little bit more about you. So if you would like to give us your pronouns, your house, your Patronus, your wand, and then your favorite food that is not pizza, because we already know that you like pizza because it was your first TikTok and it was adorable. And when we saw a Hufflepuff eating pizza, we were like, we must have this man.
Okay, well, let's see here. You got my house.
Hufflepuff.
My Patronus is the Hodag.
What is that?
Oh.
Oh, yes. Oh, that thing that you took the picture with out in. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So this is your Patronus. You've chosen a very, very mean looking Patronus, David. I don't know if that fits your personality.
Well, I wanted one that could protect. And by the way, in case you missed it, the Hodag is in fact listed in Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find It.
Oh, okay. We have that book too. That's such a pretty book with all the illustrations. I love that.
Yeah, well, this is page 62. There you go. That's my Patronus. I wanted a big, potent Patronus. My wand is plastic, 6 inches, with an ink core. Most powerful wand there is, because you've heard how the pen is mightier than the sword.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Well, with this wand, cute. I can do things like write letters. I can sign checks.
Yeah, you can do a lot of powerful things with that kind of wand.
That's true.
I love that.
I really appreciate when people self-choose their own Patronuses and wands, because it just, the test online just feels so random for the most part. But it's nice to have some people who are being more creative. Like, I personally think Mel's Patronus is a potato. But...
You know, you got that wrong. I am a potato. So I don't need to have a Patronus. That is what it could be a loaf of bread.
Oh, yeah. Your Patronus could easily be a loaf of bread, too.
Und wir wissen ja, dass die Deutschen immer lieben sehr Kartoffeln.
Ja. See, even he knows that. Und wir lieben unser Brot. Brot und Kartoffeln.
You're talking about bread?
No, yeah. No, we're saying that Germans love potatoes.
Oh, they do. Yes. Oh, yeah, I know. Mel has made it very clear to me that that is definitely something she loves a lot. And it's something that German people do love quite a lot.
Yeah.
And my favorite food beside pizza, having already shown me eating pizza.
Yes.
Is barbecued spare ribs.
Okay.
My wife and I follow a very low meat diet.
Mm-hmm.
We'll typically maybe have only 3 meat meals in a week.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, it's good for your health, good for the environment. Mel's a vegan and I'm a vegetarian for health and animal conscious reasons.
Yep.
So. Do-do-do-do-do-do. News. And welcome to the news. We're not picking a time of day anymore because, whatever. I have no idea what time people listen to this. So it's not even worth it. But... Mel.
Yes.
The biggest piece of news that we have this week, I think, is something that we just talked about very, 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 very briefly with David at the top of the episode, that this is our 50th episode.
50!
We're old! We almost qualify for retirement. We're getting up there. Social Security benefits, here we come!
And then again, in March, we're celebrating our second birthday, and then we're gonna feel like little babies again, so...
Yeah, it's kind of a whiplash situation where you're not really sure what's going on, but... It's so exciting that we made it to 50 episodes. I mean, not that you and I ever doubted that we would make it this far, because people ask us, they're like, when are you going to end the podcast? And both of us are like, I don't know. Is there an end date to this podcast?
Who asked that?
I feel like people ask that, especially in the time of COVID podcasts, where there have been a lot of like...
Really?
Yeah, I've had people ask. Or just...
Not even one person asked me, when are you going to stop with Puffcast? Are they desperate for us to shut up?
Well, I mean, people ask, like, what, like, how long do you think you're going to be podcasting for? Like, general questions like that. Because podcasts, they have, like, a set limit. Like, they will say, okay, we're going to just do this book or something, and then we're done.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what some people are, but you and I, Mel, we don't plan on ending until we literally pass away, and then maybe as ghosts, people will come back and do this. And
exactly.
Don't look forward to us going anywhere anytime soon, whether that's a good thing or a bad thing in your brain. We're here. Deal with it.
So, 50 episodes, Juliana.
Yeah.
Very short reflection section.
Yes, feelings, thoughts. Mel, would you like to start us off with any feelings, thoughts, emotions that you have?
We recently contemplated our growth.
Yes.
Listening to our very first couple episodes that still sound... sound quality wise are terrible. Editing wise are terrible.
You can blame me for that. That was me. I'm not a good editor. I know it.
Are a little bit having a bit of a rigid feel to it. Maybe not so horribly bad, but definitely much different than it is right now. And I think that we have done quite well. So that is definitely something when I look back at our beginning, that is the first thing that pops into my mind. How much we have been growing and gotten better.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty proud of us for doing that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm proud of us for growing as a podcast. And you can definitely tell that, just on a personal note, Mel, that our friendship has grown throughout this entire thing, which is really, 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 really nice. And I love that the most. I think my second favorite thing is how much you have grown in your confidence in being a podcaster, because when we started this, I know you were a lot more nervous than you and have been recently, and you just recently went on your own guest appearance show thingy, whatever, and...
Clearly, we haven't gotten better with words, but...
No, we're still... That's still a big place for improvement here. Word-finding skills...
We should maybe mention also that sometimes when you are recording episodes, not everything is always recorded in the same way
in the same order.
Yes, thank you. Yep. In the same order.
This is coming after two other recordings.
We already recorded a bonus for Patreon, then we had the main episode part with our interview,
and now we are
recording the feedback at the end, but you're hearing that as the one of the first things, so this is how podcast magic works.
You know what, Mel? So I'm realizing, Mel, you and I have been tripping over words this entire day, and do you know why that is?
Why?
You cursed us. You said that we were too professional, and you said that we needed more bloopers, and you... cursed us, Melanie.
Don't say my name here.
Melanie, German person who lives in Finland.
You might not be wrong about that. Well, look at us.
You being a witch over there, just cursing this episode, being like, well, we don't have enough bloopers. Well, maybe we should not be so professional anymore, but maybe we aren't so professional because somebody opens their big old mouth.
Well, good for Patreon. look forward to it. Listening to our babbling and nonsense.
I think the good thing is, though, Mel, this proves that you are a witch.
Haha, I put a spell on you. Isn't there a song about that?
I put a spell on you. That's definitely a song, but
yeah. Okay. Anyway, back to what we were talking about. So we're keeping it short.
But yes, I was saying that I'm very proud of you, Mel, in how much you've grown as a podcaster and in your confidence levels.
Aww.
And your ability to just be more confident in your speaking, in your public speaking skills. And I'm very proud of you for that.
Thank you. Well, I think that you have definitely grown as well. You are just continuously...
crazier and crazier.
Well, yeah, weirder and weirder. I think it's because you are more and more comfortable with me, and that's why.
Yeah, and in general, too. Yeah, but a lot of that stems from my comfort level with you, though, Mel. You're the kind of the touch point for that.
I can tell, definitely, that you are much more easygoing and loose, and you just let it all out, and I really enjoy that, even though I sometimes might have to pull Juliana back a little bit so that we can actually record.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think we have both been doing quite well, and...
Yeah, I think it's nice for us to look back on 50 episodes before us and fully know that we have grown a lot in a positive manner, because that is what we want to do. And I know when we started this podcast, that was our goal, was to make each episode a little bit better than the last one.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, that's still our goal. In no way are we perfect, as made by the example that we just happened like a minute ago.
Give us another 50 years and then we might be like spotlessly perfect.
But that's no fun though, because then you don't get things like go to fourth or the potato bread theory or...
And that's exactly why I said that I'm running out of bloopers. We are not talking enough nonsense anymore. What is happening? Are we getting too good?
Or that nonsense is just starting to make sense. That's the problem.
Maybe. Or maybe I have just started to leave more of the nonsense in because it makes the episode fun.
Yes, I think that's it too. I agree. I love it. But either way, I'm more than happy to be 50 years old with you, Mel.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, me too. And then, obviously, we're having our second birthday coming up quite soon, mm-hmm. so... I think around that time, we're gonna talk a little bit more about what we have achieved in the last year and done.
Yeah.
That we are sounding pretty good, I think. Just the things that we have done in these 50 episodes, how many amazing guests we have had.
Yeah, we've had a lot.
Really? Sometimes I'm just wondering, like, how? How did we do
this? I forget some of the interviews and like conversations that we had. Conversations like, I remember Allie's episode. Some of those conversations that we had were, I'm listening back to that episode. That was so fun.
Definitely a lot of blooper material in that one.
Yeah.
Do you mean our Allie from our girls group or our Protego Allie?
Well, Protego Allie was also very fun, but I was thinking of Sprout Girls Group Allie.
Yeah. That was a very bloopery episode.
Yes.
But really fun.
Yeah. It's been a fun time. And just briefly, Mel, speaking of our birthday episode, listeners, I know that last year we participated in the WAVA Rescue Center's live stream, and for our birthday, we are actually going to be participating in that again, which is super exciting. So look forward to more information coming about that and how you can join in the live stream and how you can donate to them again, because last year I think we raised over $700, which is absolutely bananas, and that goes to help the rape crisis victims that they help and aid, which is absolutely just a fabulous cause to be helping. Just look forward to that again for us, because we had so much fun with them. The Pizza Wizard is definitely coming back, don't you worry. You can get personalized greetings from the Pizza Wizard. He'll be here. He booked it out in his calendar.
I have to say, they specifically sent us...
They requested him.
...a message asking if we and the Pizza Wizard can come back. And we're like, sure, we would love to.
We have to talk to his agent to make sure that he's going to be available that day. You know, he's a busy slice.
Yeah. No, but what a great way to celebrate our second birthday, having... this same charity event happening again and collecting money for a great, great cause that is very important. I hope that you will all join us again this year and help us out to collect some more donations for them and help more people.
Speaking of birthdays, Mel, I can now officially wish you a happy birthday, because it's after your birthday and I'm not cursing you in the German tradition or whatever it is that I can't say happy birthday before your birthday. Happy birthday, Lady Melanie of Glencoe?
Okay, let's wait a moment. I actually wanted to say thank you to all of you listeners and friends that have actually been spamming our Instagram and my page, like spamming in a good way, that you have all been sending so many birthday wishes. That was great. I actually saw two or three more on Twitter. Our Twitter is very quiet because we are not really doing much there. Yeah. But I have just discovered today that there were some birthday wishes too that I haven't seen before. So thank you all together for sending wishes to me. That was very nice. I very much appreciated that. And especially, I actually got a birthday wish as a puff, a birthday wish from John Campling, the Death Eater. That is life's goal achieved.
Yeah. Mel can now leave. Goodbye. See you later, Mel.
But also, I got a very special gift from Juliana here.
You did. So listeners, you better listen to this closely, because this is how you must go forth in your life addressing this lovely person.
I am now officially Lady Melanie of Glencoe. I am owning 1 square foot of Glencoe Wood, Kyle Hill, Highland in Scotland. So I am A lady now, and henceforth you shall
call her Lady Melanie. Lady Mel. She is part of the royal lineage of Glencoe now, because she now owns land there, and we've decided that I am Juliana Lady-in-Waiting.
Our audio messages for each other lately have been a little bit fancier because of that.
Yes, I would say so. I would agree.
Yeah, so Juliana actually, like, truly, of course, the title is not, like, official, you know, you can't buy a title like that, but it's more of a fun thing that this people do.
Yeah, to preserve. It goes towards a nature preserve. All the money goes to that.
So 1 square foot, which is only 30 to 30 centimeters.
And you can go visit it. I sent Mel the location of her spot, too, so she can go visit her little plot of land.
I am imagining that it has actually the entrance to the Badger Cave of whatever fabulous Badger family is living underground there. I mean, it's Scotland after all. Okay, so
we do have one more piece of, like, news in the news.
Uh-huh.
In the news, as we do. And it is that the Harry Potter Hogwarts Tournament of Houses is a Producers Guild Awards nominee for the Outstanding Children's Program category.
Woohoo!
Yay! And that is the program that David, our guest, was a part of, which is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
This program was nominated alongside the Animaniacs Season 2, Muppets Haunted Mansion, See Us Coming Together, a Sesame Street special, and Waffles and Mochi, which I actually have watched Waffles and Mochi. No shame. I love Michelle Obama. It's kind of her show. It is the most adorable, cute show I've ever seen.
I have no idea what it is, but I have to check it out then.
You would actually, and it's about cooking and healthy eating. It's really cute.
Okay, that sounds great.
I loved it.
So good luck, guys. I hope that you win. That would be very cool.
It's good to see them getting this nomination. We also have some lovely feedback from some of our friends who have been interacting with us on our social media. We have a lovely new friend named Jenny Nicole.
Hello.
Who reached out to us on Instagram and was, oh my gosh, so sweet and so lovely. And Jenny, thank you for listening. And I sent her a voicemail mail, and she said it felt like she was getting contacted by, like, a celebrity. And I was like, oh boy, wow. Because I am not a celebrity. Like, let's be real here. I definitely am not. Melanie is a lady, but Juliana is not a celebrity.
Yes, I am.
Facts upon facts upon facts. So Jenny reached out to us and she said, I'm just stumbling across your podcast and I'm on the Puffs the Play episode. We just did a show in October at my local theater and now I'm sobbing because of the nostalgia. I was Sally Perks / Blondo / Bippy, and this was one of the best shows I have ever had the pleasure to be a part of, and the cast became family in true Puffs fashion. I'm so glad you guys covered the play because it does not get enough recognition. We agree about that.
Yeah.
Also, I love Puffcast. I just heard that you love Jay Finch. My boyfriend, whom I met in Puffs, played Jay Finch / Zach Smith and asked me to be his girlfriend on stage during the Zach Smith improv scene by having Sally stand in front of the girl named Jenny he's been crushing on so he can practice asking her out. I'm now listening to Puffcast and high-key fangirling, newly obsessed with this podcast and can't wait to go to the Protego episode. And I'm just so excited to having found this podcast. So, Jenny, we're excited to have you, and that is such a cute story about you yes. and your boyfriend.
Ah, it's so sweet. And how creative of him to pull that into the play. That is so cute. I love it.
That's really adorable. So thank you, Jenny. And our next bit, we have our responses to Buttercup's question of the week, which from our last episode was, what are your favorite Fantastic Beasts 3 theories? And Mel, we actually have a theory from Jenny, if you want to read that off.
Yeah, so Jenny got very excited about this one, I guess. And all I can... I'll give you my response afterwards. She is saying, okay, here's how I'll support Goddard. Veering away from Aberforth plus Goat. What if Aberforth never got the opportunity to settle down and have children, or couldn't have children, so his inappropriate spells on goats were trying to transfigure them into humans so he could have a son, and when he finally did, it led to Credence. Juliana, I'll hang out on a random rock about halfway up the hill that you are dying on and yodel to you occasionally. You are all insane. What's wrong with you?
But isn't it more fun to be crazy? Do I know that I'm probably wrong? Yes.
Probably.
I mean, honestly, the way that Crimes of Grindelwald went, Mel, I feel like no theory is safe at this point, because that movie was just so off the rails with a lot of things that no one could have seen coming. I don't want to let any theory go untouched. I would like to represent my favorites here. Thank you very much.
This one is going to haunt us for the rest of our Puffcast career.
Oh, I hope so.
I hope not. But thank you, Jenny, for feeding Juliana's weird fantasies. Yes. I do not appreciate it. But I do appreciate you advocating for vegan cheese. I told you that already today of recording.
Yeah, she's a vegan.
Yeah. So thank you on that part, at least.
Yeah.
And then we still have one more.
Yes. So we got a response from Kaylee, and this is in regards to your bread theory, Mel.
Yeah, from last episode.
Yes. And she said, hey, listen, some sourdough starters are very valuable. Can't blame Grindelwald for recognizing a good quality gluten.
I appreciate that one.
Yes. I stand behind this theory too, Mel. You know, I'll stand behind any theory really at this point, because we don't know what the movie's going to be, and why not just have some fun?
Yeah.
Honestly.
If you don't know exactly what it was about, go back to our last episode and re-listen to my idea of a theory. So yes. It's the secret bread recipe that Jacob is trying to hide from Grindelwald, and then see what happens. Thank you, Kaylee, for that. So we have actually one extra question thrown at us by no other but Ryan, the Professor Umbledore, the famous...
Yes, the very famous, he is the son of Umbridge and Dumbledore. He is just serving looks, serving attitude, serving sass, and we appreciate all of it.
Also part of Slytherin team of the Tournament of Houses.
Yeah, we'll be having him on the show soon too.
Yeah, we will. So that's gonna be really fun. He just dropped a very random question under one of our posts, and I thought, why not just ask ourselves this question in the episode? So, Ryan, here it is. Are all Hufflepuffs vegan, or are all vegans Hufflepuffs?
I feel like this is a square or rectangle, or is a rectangle a square? I feel like this is the question we're asking now.
So, what do we think, Juliana?
Well, I mean, as a non-vegan Hufflepuff, I'm going to have to say that not all Hufflepuffs are vegan. And listeners, hang 10 for David's favorite food, because he will also prove that not all Hufflepuffs are vegan. I don't think all vegans are Hufflepuffs, but I definitely could see a good chunk of vegans being Hufflepuffs.
I definitely know there are a lot of vegans in other houses as well. Some of my friends actually are Ravenclaws and Slytherins. If we're just thinking of Ellie, for example.
Yeah, she's a Slytherin.
Yeah.
I feel like the two houses where it would be the most predominant would probably be Hufflepuff and Ravenclaw.
Yeah, as we have learned actually from our episode being a guest on ProtagoCast, and they counted down their staff members and what houses they are from.
Oh, yeah.
They were mostly Ravenclaws in that. And then second came Hufflepuffs.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's more to that. You would have to have a big, big study of that. But yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Small sample size.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Ryan.
Thank you. And Ryan's actually at the, he went to one of the concerts today for where they play the music behind the movie.
Yes.
Dressed as Professor Umbridge.
Yes.
So, Ryan, we hope you enjoyed that, and we hope you brought that Professor Umbridge energy with you to the whole concert. Really just like kind of...
He definitely did.
Just like really made it happen, you know?
Yeah, I have no doubt in my mind. He went all out for sure. Okay, oh, yeah. Thank you for that great question. Maybe at the time when you are on, you might want to give us your answer, if you have one. Let's
yeah,
see.
Yeah, to this philosophical question.
Okay, so that was all our feedback for today and news.
That is all we have. So, listeners, let's head back into the episode with David. Oh, hello, I'm here. Hi. Hello.
Hello.
Is anyone there? Hello? Yeah.
Hello. I think we are still stuck in the feedback, Juliana.
Oh, darn. Okay, different door.
Okay, try again.
I guess the first thing that everybody seems to notice about me is that I was at least 20 years older than anybody else in competing up there. Maybe 30 or 40 years old, I'm not sure. I'm 77. Which means, guess what? I did not grow up with the Harry Potter books, you know. I did kind of grow up with Lord of the Rings.
Oh, okay.
Nice choice. Yeah.
Mel loves Lord of the Rings.
That was years ago when Lord of the Rings was only a book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I became interested in the Harry Potter books just because I've always liked fantasy and science fiction a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife, who was a school librarian, she is now retired as I am, had heard this rumor passed among school librarians, hey, there's this great series of books that really gets kids excited about reading. And being a faithful librarian, already to push something like that, she told me about mm-hmm. this. My wife and I slightly disagree about when we started reading them. I think I found a note which indicates that I read the first book about 2 months before the second book came out here in the United States.
Okay.
Then the first Harry Potter conference I went to was in, I think, about 2007.
Wow, okay.
And it was a one-off conference at the University of Pennsylvania. I lived near Philadelphia at that time, but I met John Granger there, and wow. I first chance to make a presentation. Didn't go particularly well. But since then, I've gone to, I guess, about a dozen conferences. I've been to MystiCon mm-hmm. up in New Hampshire, LeakyCon several times, and I'm hoping to get together. LeakyCon just opened up their invitation for programming this week, and so I thought I would try to put together a presentation with some of the other participants in the Tournament of Houses. I thought we could
yeah.
do a panel like
that. Oh, yeah, I would definitely go to that panel.
Yeah, I've made... I don't know, I guess about a dozen presentations, but there's three that I am particularly well known for, maybe mm-hmm. even infamous. One is a presentation explaining why the wizards use old-fashioned stuff.
Oh, okay. Mel and I just kind of had a conversation about why they don't use updated technology. So would you like to give us maybe the synopsis or your main point that you made during that?
Well, let's put it this way. If I wanted to find beautifully, perfectly preserved automobiles from the 1950s, and I could go anywhere in the world to find them, where would I go? Maybe you don't know. You'd go to Cuba. When Cuba got cut off from the United States, they had to keep and preserve all the cars they had.
Oh.
It's a fairly common thing that when a small group separates from a big group, a small group will retain what was in use at the time mm-hmm. of the separation. That's why you can go into Appalachia, or at least you could 80 and 100 years ago, and you can find folk songs that came directly from England and Scotland in the 1600s. So that's a very, fairly common pattern. The language used by the residents of Pitcairn Island is still full of English from the 17th century or 18th century, I forget which. So what happened when the wizards went into hiding? Mm-hmm. In many ways, they kind of stopped right then. And a lot of little things they do show that. For instance, one of the first things we're told about Dumbledore is he wears high-heeled shoes. Mm-hmm. No, this has nothing to do with his sexual orientation. High-heeled mm-hmm. shoes is what fashionable men wore in the 1600s. And things that they don't know about are all things that have been invented since then. For instance, you'll notice that all the wizards don't know how to use matches at the Quidditch World Cup.
Oh, yeah.
Matches were developed in about 1820. So, yeah, long after they'd gone into hiding. You notice that the wizards only use coins for their money, no paper money. Wizards went into hiding in 1692. First paper money used in England, 1710. At the time the wizards went into hiding, money was things like pieces of eight, and it was the silver shilling and things like that. Mrs. Weasley doesn't know how to use postage stamps. Mm-hmm. Again, postage stamps, I believe, are late 1700s. The wizards all heat with fireplaces. You know, the reason we don't heat our homes with fireplaces is because they're terribly inefficient. You know, 80% of the heat goes right up the chimney. So now we have central heating. But before that, we had the Franklin stove. And if we didn't remember Benjamin Franklin for anything else, he would still be viewed as a great benefactor because a Franklin stove can generate about 5 to 10 times as much heat from a given chunk of wood as a fireplace can. So the point is, on and on, you look at thing after thing after thing after thing, you'll find that the wizards are using what was in effect when they went into hiding. There are some exceptions, obviously the Hogwarts Express.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But that was part of Rowling's world-building process. And she mm-hmm. said, okay, what would people be familiar with in 1692? And she kept that. So you'll notice Ron does not know the story of Cinderella. Mm-hmm. Though there's Cinderella-style stories going back forever. The one we have was written by Charles Perrault, and he wrote it like 10 years after the wizards went into hiding. And that was called Cendrillon. It was in French, of course. And you didn't get an English translation of that until about 1810. On the other hand, Ron does know about chess. Chess came to the British Isles in the 1200s. So, so that was one of my things. Why did the wizards use old-fashioned things? Then another one I've done is had the great blessing of having lived in England for about 18 months back in 75 to early 77. It's what Americans misunderstand about the novels because they're not aware of the British context. A small example, on Harry's first Christmas at Hogwarts, his aunt and uncle send him a 50 pence piece. And Ron looks at it and says, this is money? Wow, what a weird shape. Okay, the 50 pence piece in Britain is a 7-sided coin. And furthermore, the sides aren't even straight. They're slightly curved outward so that the coin will in fact roll if you put it down a chute in a vending machine. Mr. Weasley collects plugs. That seems really weird. Until you know that, in Britain, the standard shape of an electrical plug was not standardized until very late, until like the 1970s or 1980s. And so before then, you would buy an electrical appliance and it would come not with a plug on it, with 3 bare wires. And then you had to go to the electrical shop and find the plug that would fit the fixtures in your house. And that always came with a little diagram showing you how to wire a plug, which, and of course, Mr. Weasley has such a diagram pinned up in his office.
Yeah, that's so much work.
Yeah. And those are the two semi-scholarly things I've done. But then the one I do, which always gets a lot of laughs, is I have a piece when I try to imagine what was in that book, 12 Failsafe Ways to Charm Witches.
Ah.
So ideally, I look at Ron's behavior before and after he got the book and say, aha, therefore the book must have had said something about this. Mm-hmm. I'll give you what is perhaps my clearest example.
Yeah.
In the third book, Prisoner of Azkaban, Ron and Hermione are fighting. They fight in every book. They fought because Ron believed the Crookshanks had eaten Scabbers.
Oh, yeah.
There's a scene when Hermione comes up to them with the news that Buckbeak's appeal has been lost. Mm-hmm. And Hermione says, there'll be an appeal. There always is, but nothing will have changed. And Ron says, yes, things will have changed. I'll help you this time. And Hermione comes forward and throws her arms around him and says, oh, Ron, you know, and she breaks down and sobs.
Yeah.
She said, I'm so sorry about Scabbers. And Ron, like any proper 13-year-old boy, is terrified. And he's very relieved when she finally lets go. Okay, that's Ron at age 13 before he got the book. Let's flash forward 3.5 years, 3 books. We get to another time when Hermione's very upset. Dumbledore's funeral. Hermione is sobbing on Ron's shoulder, and he's holding her and stroking her hair and patting her. And so I say, aha, the book must have said something about how you comfort a woman when she's crying. One of my 12 ways to charm witches is be a shoulder to cry on.
Oh, that's cute.
Then the thing is to realize, I also deliver the text, all the advice in this book, in the most male chauvinistic way, but it's actually good advice. So it's, in that chapter, it says, your witch will cry a lot. Get used to it. This is normal. Anyway, I go through all 12 points. There's such profound things as listen to your witch. This may be harder than you think, but listen to her. And anyway, I did that, and that always gets a lot of laughs.
Oh, that's cute.
But well, I've got 2 follow-ups on that. One is that at least 3 times after I've made such a presentation, a woman will come up to, and I say woman because I'm talking about someone who is, say, 40 or more. Mm-hmm. Someone will come up to me later and say, now you need to write one for the witches on how to charm.
Oh, yeah.
And I've tried that, but I can't pull it off. You see, me, a male, standing in front of a largely female audience, because that's the way it is at the conferences, making fun of the things, stupid things that men do, that works. Me, obviously, male, standing in front of a largely female audience, trying to make fun of the stupid things that women do, yeah, that's going to be a much harder job. I'm looking for a well-qualified woman to take up that job. So that's the first story. Second story is this. I once made this speech, and it had gone over well, and you know, and people were coming up to me later and congratulating me and wanted to take selfies with me. About 5 minutes later, this young woman, perhaps 11 or 12 years old, comes bouncing up to me and says, oh, can I take a selfie with you? And I say, sure, and I bend down, and she takes the selfie, and I think this must be another person who heard my great talk and loved it. And she takes the final, she says, thanks. I just wanted to show my friends that there's old people here too.
What?
That's pretty funny.
That put me in my place.
That's cute. I like that.
Oh, if she now sees you on TV, she will regret that.
it was a legitimate, you know, classification of me. I was the old person. I did get one note on one of my postings that somebody wrote and said, I'm 82 years old, and I love the Harry Potter novels. I'm glad there was someone there to represent the older generation.
That's so nice. Must be a little bit challenging sometimes to be kind of in the age minority, because definitely, for me personally, I am in the vast age majority. I was 11 years old, like around when Harry was 11, so I literally grew up with Harry, and that's kind of the bulk of the fandom, but there are people like you and the new Harry Potter fans on the other side, like our friend the Potter Kid. You guys are kind of on the minority levels of things, and that must be kind of challenging sometimes, especially if you're someone like yourself who's putting yourself out there and going to cons and now being a famous movie TV star.
I am so surprised about that. I mean, I'm a nice guy, I think, but there is this image of me generated out there where I'm some kind of wonderful combination of Mr. Rogers and Albus Dumbledore. And I assure you, I'm a perfectly normal guy, you know?
Well, I think it's just, you're such like a lovable person, David. And like we said, we don't have many people who are above the age of like 60 or 70 who are part of the fandom. And you just exude adorable, fun, kind vibes. We all just want more of that in our lives. Some of it, you just have such a nice being about you that I think a lot of people really were attracted to that.
I think that is exactly what we liked so much about the show, that we did have such a variety, not just by where everyone comes from, but also what ages we had, so that you were there representing the older generation and being just as invested into these stories as we are is just so nice and fun to see.
Well, we contestants have had a number of discussions among ourselves, and we've tried to figure out why we were picked. Mm-hmm. It's also worthwhile knowing that A, they started out with hundreds of people filled out the online applications, maybe thousands, I don't know. And even when we got to the point where they paid our airfare and our hotels to get us out there into Hollywood, they actually brought in, I guess Lou told you about this. Yeah, that we brought in six for each house.
Six, yeah.
Looking over the 12 of us they selected, first of all, though this show was a lot of fun and reaffirmed the fandom, in one sense, it was nothing but a big commercial for the movies. And I accept that. That's legit.
True, yeah.
And my thought was, as I looked over the people they selected, I think they went to get to parts of the fandom that they might, that maybe are not yet fully invested in it, or they were trying to reach out for the poorly served market. So in a sense, I figure I was a diversity pick for the older people. Furthermore, you know that the fandom runs heavily female. Of the 12 of us out there, 5 of us were male.
Mm-hmm,
so that's pretty close to half.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Furthermore, the fandom tends to be very white. And we had 4 Black people and I think 1 Asian.
Yeah, Michelle is Asian American.
Yeah, and Vincent is...
Oh yeah, and Vincent is also Asian American. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think there was also some fear that gay people or trans people would feel somewhat alienated. And so I didn't keep track, but I think there's at least 2, maybe 3 gay people. I don't really track people's sexualities that much.
Yeah, I know there's at least 2 queer people on the show that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
So our thought was that they were picking us partially to appeal to underserved parts of the base,
mm-hmm.
a potential base. Otherwise, if they had been doing a straight knowledge test, I guarantee you there are people smarter than anyone you saw up there. Because I've run into these conferences. I run into 17 or 18-year-old girls. I'm thinking of one in particular, who if they don't have the books memorized from beginning to end, they come very close to it. I was in a quiz session, must have been back in 2019. We had formed up groups, and I was in a group of 5. The girl who was in that 17-year-old girl who was in this group, she came up with every answer just bang, 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 bang. And all I was able to do was occasionally confirm that she was correct. The toughest question we had, where I would have gone totally wrong, was this. After Voldemort is reincarnated and has his body back again, who is the first Death Eater who dies?
Yaxley?
No.
It's not one of the Kharr. Who is it?
Igor Karkaroff.
Oh, Igor Karkaroff. Oh, yeah, you're right. Oh.
But she knew that. She came up with it.
Wow.
I would have gotten somebody else, too.
Yeah.
So if they've been doing a straight knowledge test, I am sure that they would have come up with different people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We kind of had a conversation similar to this with Luke, and I don't know if this was a personal conversation that I had or if this was something we had on the pod, but we also felt like each of the contestants had to be the perfect mix of willing to be public, because I know a lot of people too who are very, very knowledgeable about Harry Potter, but they don't want to be on TV. Like, they want nothing to do with being on TV or like in anything like that. And also, you're okay with getting any of the kickback that happens, because I know like specifically Ryan has been getting like a lot of kickback.
Yeah.
But you have to be someone who has a thick enough skin to be on TV. Just knowing the Harry Potter fandom, it's a kind of an introverted fandom. And I know there are a lot of people who would, the second you told them they had to be on national television, they would say no thank you, because it's just too much.
Well, I do know that stage fright is extremely common.
Yeah.
The most common phobia, at least in America, is fear of dogs. The second most is fear of public speaking. Okay, you mentioned that Ryan is getting negative talk back.
Mm-hmm.
That's, again, a thing that puzzles me. Everybody likes me. I think maybe I saw one negative comment. It was in a language I don't read, and so I was making guesses at what a couple of words meant. But wow, as I say, I'm a bit surprised.
Yeah, well, I think generally speaking, the Harry Potter fandom is like a very positive fandom to be a part of. And you know that from the conferences that you go to. So we too, along with Ryan himself, are surprised at the level of kickback that he's gotten. I think a lot of that is coming from people who are active on social media, but aren't really like part of the Harry Potter fandom actively and just saw him. And are those valid but casual Harry Potter fans that aren't as intuitive as we are and don't understand the nuances?
Or at least they didn't understand the message that comes through the books that is
taught to us.
Yeah. Whereas you just have like a lovable face, David, and such a lovable attitude about yourself.
They worked on me. I've never had to go through makeup before, but you know, they puffed my face and they fussed with my hair to get it just right. I've never looked so good in my life. Well, not in the last 50 years. I've never. Maybe when I was a dashing young man of 23 or something, but.
Well, we thought you looked very dashing.
Oh, thank you.
They did a good job. That must have been very interesting for you to go through that, because I'm imagining you hadn't been part of a big production before, unless you have.
I mean, I've done presentations at conferences, and sometimes that involves, you know, setting up a projector and getting your computer hooked up so you can flash your PowerPoint screen slides. But that was one of the ways in which Luke was very helpful to me, because he is used to the kind of thing that goes on. Otherwise, I'd have to go back to my experience with the senior play in high school to have some concept of what was going on.
What was like the most interesting part? Is there anything that sticks out to you during the actual like production and preparation where you were like, oh my goodness, I can't believe this actually happens behind the scenes?
There was one thing I found very confusing. Normally, if you enter a work environment, you're able to figure out who has what role because of how they're dressed. Oh, this person must be the boss. Oh, that person must be the receptionist and so on. None of those rules work backstage because, first of all, everybody was dressed in Hollywood casual, I'd have to call it. And everybody called each other by their first names. So you didn't know whether this guy was just the hairstylist or was he the producer and director? And so I found that very confusing. And that's where I was guided very much by Luke. He was more familiar with this.
I think you hear very often the stories from sets like this, that the crew is very close and like a family. And that's why everyone is probably just using the first names and everything is more casual, I would assume.
Well, it just made it, I found it confusing, you know, who am I taking orders from? Where do we do now? Who said that?
Just follow Helen Mirren and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
Can you talk about the audition process? I know that it happened virtually. When did you guys figure out that you were going to actually be going to Hollywood to film this? And what was that event like?
All right. First of all, I don't know much about the process of selecting the contestants. Happened over several months. Mm-hmm. First of all, I found out it was happening because of John Granger's website. I have contributed several times to John Granger's website, hogwartsprofessor.com. Mm-hmm. And if you want to see some of my writings, you can go look there. He had been contacted by the producers. The producers were our company called The Old Company. And the old company was essentially hired by Warner Brothers to do this. And so I filled out the form on like a Thursday afternoon. Friday at about noon, I got a call and the person I was speaking to asked me several questions just to try to gauge the level of my expertise. And most of them, I just went bang, bang, bang. I knew them. The two I remember missing is they asked me what was the first film that did not have the man who did the music for the first two films.
John Williams.
John Williams, yes. They asked me what was the first film where John Williams was not in charge of the music. And I guessed it was the third film, but no, it was the fourth film.
Oh, I would have guessed the third film too.
Yeah. The other question they asked me that I couldn't answer, they asked what two actors in the seventh film are actually close relatives.
You
know that one?
It is Ralph Fiennes, and I think was it the boy that played young Tom Riddle?
They are uncle and nephew.
Yeah.
However, there is in fact a father-son team.
Oh.
But the actor who played Mad-Eye Moody, he is the father of the man who plays Bill Weasley.
Oh, we did know this, Mel.
Yeah, well, anyway, that's what I didn't get. But then, otherwise, they asked me things. The one thing they asked me that they said on my initial application, they'd ask, you know, what have you done with Harry Potter? I commented I'd been to conferences, I'd done presentations. And I also commented that in my role as a part-time teacher of computer science at the local community college, I had given my students a problem involving currency. I'd asked them to write a program to calculate a 4.5% sales tax for goods sold in Diagon Alley. So And to do that correctly, you have to absolutely know that there are 29 knuts to a sickle and 17 sickles to a galleon in order to work out the math and figure out your 4.5% and then convert it all back. And so they asked me, their final question was, how many? And I said, well, it's 17 and 29. But if you wish to convert directly between the two of them, it's 493 knuts to a galleon.
I think that's where you sealed in your ticket to Hollywood right there.
I think so too. They were like, yeah, I'm sure that's correct.
You're like, okay, we liked this guy already, but he definitely already has a ticket. We are sending him express to the Hollywood studios.
I was told to get ready for a Zoom interview on Monday. I got an email before that Zoom interview which said, we'd like to see some recordings of you doing brief presentations. So with my one daughter, Esther, basically directed me and told me what to do. And I made three short presentations. Those were shipped off. Then I had a Zoom interview and the woman just asked me a number of open-ended questions. And what I regret about that is I recorded that. But unfortunately, that software only recorded her questions and not my answers to them.
Oh, no.
Anyway, and then time went by. By the way, at that time, I was frantically busy because I was simultaneously moving out of the house my wife and I and our family had lived in for 40 years. But I got a message saying, are you vaccinated? And I said, yes, we're vaccinated. Mm-hmm. And then a while later, they said, could you come to Hollywood on these dates? And it was like sometime in August. And I said, yeah, I could do that. And then a while later, they came back and said, can you prove you're vaccinated? We'd like to see a copy of your vaccinations. And then they said, well, the dates have changed again. What about if we were recording in September? And all this time, those are the only information I got. And then finally, I got a note saying, we'd like you to come to Hollywood. You'll come on September 19th, and you'll be there until the 26th. That's a Sunday to a Sunday. Mm. And it was just an email. They said, bring the clothes you would wear on the show. Mm-hmm. You'll need to have, and they named out some things they'd want as alternatives, and they wanted to know my size, height, weight, collar size, everything. They were very conscious through this whole process of the dangers of the virus. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that happened is like 2 days, maybe 3 days before I was scheduled to catch the plane, I received a COVID test and I had to take it and then I had to package it up and this was all set up and arranged. So they checked it and then I got back the answer on that like 18 hours later. And then when we were there, we arrived on a Sunday. They gave us a test on Monday. They gave us a test on Wednesday. They gave us a test on Friday. Mm-hmm. And then you'll notice that, of course, the audience is all double masked.
Right. Yep.
So they were very conscious of that. So the selection process was I made my pitch in June. And after that, they simply came up with emails occasionally asking for questions. That's it. Now, there was also a selection process, of course, that week, because they told us, having invited six for each house, that mm-hmm. there would be a final selection. And as Lou has already told you, we didn't know that until they called our name.
Yeah.
By the way, you'll notice I am the last name called.
Save the best for last, right?
Yeah. Because they called Gryffindor first. And then they came to Hufflepuff. And I knew there would be three. And there was one, two. And I was saying, okay, I got this far. It was a good run. It was a lot of fun, but I'll live with this,
Yeah.
Ah, and so you see me standing up there. And
yeah. Yeah. How did you feel in that moment when you finally heard your name and you knew for a fact that you were going to be competing on the show?
I was pleased. I was excited.
Yeah.
But I have very little stage fright. And so I'd already talked myself into if it is what it is, I've done everything I can do with it for it. But what's also clear to me, you asked about the selection process. Mm-hmm. In that week they had us there in quarantine at the hotel, they had a time when they came down to teach us the games and they would take the six of us from Hufflepuff, and I assume they did the same with the other houses, divide us up into two teams of three and then throw questions at us of the various kinds that we were going to have. For instance, that I guess they call it the obscuro question, the question where you have to spot some little detail going by fast.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. The thing that you helped us win with, because you're the only person in the entirety of the Harry Potter fandom that knows what that Roman numeral on that candle was.
Well, talk about that in a minute. For instance, the detail, observational detail, they showed that scene where Hermione is confronting Ron and Harry at the Yule Ball. Mm-hmm. And then she gets disgusted and walks away. The question, how many combs did Hermione have in her hair?
Oh, good Lord.
Now I forget, but it was either two and we guessed three or three and we guessed two, but we got it wrong.
Okay.
That sounds really hard.
Another question they did with the Asio, you know, where they bring in a prop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They showed us a wand. Whose wand is it?
Was it like a random Death Eater? Was it John Campling's wand? Could it be the Death Eater from the seventh movie who stops the train?
It was Hermione's wand.
Oh.
But how on earth anyone knew that? And in our practice teams, my team got it wrong and the other team got it right.
Was it her regular wand? The one that has the swirling vines on it? Or was it like her wand from the first movie that looks like a stick?
I think the one that looked like a stick.
Okay.
They would move us back and forth in those practice groups, those three people. And it occurs to me, and there was a guy sitting back there not saying anything, but just making notes.
Ah, they were.
Yeah, that was the screen test.
They were doing it without you paying attention. They were just sorting you into spots and seeing whose chemistry worked best and who was doing the best on the trivia. Aha, sneaky, sneaky. You thought you were practicing.
Yeah, and then the other thing they did is they had us model basically all the clothes we had brought with us. The infamous or famous Roman numeral question.
Yes, mm-hmm. Let's hear about this. This is a contention point that I have because, David, I'm going to tell you straight out the gate. I love the people of the Gryffindor team. I think they're fabulous. I love them all as individuals. I do not fault them to this at all, but I have a strong feeling that the people at Warner Brothers were trying to rig it so Gryffindor got through the first round, and we showed them that there's no rigging in this game. You shan't be rigging this game because their question was so easy, and this question was like so substantially like difficult. It just seemed like the Hufflepuffs in this specific round were getting a lot harder questions than the Gryffindors were. And again, this is the people writing the questions, not the actual participants themselves, because we love them. Trying to rig it so Hufflepuff would not be getting through. And then we showed them, ha 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 ha, we have David.
That's definitely the moment where people were full on the train for you.
Yeah.
Because you came through and you were not 100% sure maybe, but you did get it right and you got the point, and everyone else was just stumped by that.
Well, first of all, that was only a 10-point question.
Mm-hmm.
One of the nicest comments I thought was, they asked the Gryffindor question amounted to spelling cat, and the Hufflepuff question amounted to spelling supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Pretty much, yeah. That's a good description of the levels of easiness compared.
But the other thing was, I knew this was going to be something coming past that would go past quickly. Mm. I knew that it would be something that you could make a definite question about.
Yeah.
Like, how many are there, or what side, or something like that.
Yeah, because you kind of been through that with the training that you went through. Yeah.
How many combs in the hair? Good Lord. And so what I saw is I saw the Roman numeral 8, and I saw that was on top, and there was something under it. And mm-hmm. my only impression was that it was smaller.
Yeah.
I couldn't even score on that it was a Roman numeral. And then when the question came up, I turned to my colleagues and I realized what Lucas told you, that they were both stunned. I was ready to have a discussion with them. I said, because I was thinking maybe they'd seen something. And I saw the VIII, so that's 8. What I didn't say out loud is I know that was on top. And I know the thing under it was physically smaller. And so the calculation I went through was, well, it would be either a 7 or a 9. Yeah, a 7 in Roman numerals would be fairly large. It's VII, so it'd be 3 characters. And whereas the 9 would be IX, just 2 characters.
Mm.
So that's why I decided it was probably that shorter thing. And that's the only reason I guessed it.
Wow.
And it shows, I said, I think we should go with the 9. However, apparently what I'm a bit surprised at, and my daughter Esther confirmed this, told me this, what astonishes people is not that I saw it, but that I knew what it meant and that I can work with
really?
Roman numerals.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Aren't they taught Roman numerals anymore?
I have learned them.
I learned Roman numerals.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, yes, I learned Roman numerals in school. Besides, before I was a computer programmer, I was a math major. I mean, I can write Egyptian numerals and Babylonian numerals too, if you want. Don't ask about Greek numerals. They're no fun at all. So that was all of it. I was just about giving the answer, and I was about to say it's Roman numeral 9, and it suddenly dawned on me, I just got an impulse, oh, there is a good chunk of the audience who will not know what 9 is in Roman numerals. So I modified, I said Roman numeral 9, which is IX. Mm-hmm. And so that's the full story of it. It's amazing how many things can go through your head that quickly in a
yeah.
moment.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting too, because it sounds like you pretty much learned from the mistakes that you made in the training rounds and like looked at the things that maybe you wouldn't have even seen. And that's kind of one of the things that played to your advantage a little bit.
The other question I feel kind of proud of myself for getting was the question where they show the letters flying into Harry's house and it stopped halfway through and they say, what does Dudley do next? Hmm. And the answer is Dudley goes and sits in his mother's lap. I only knew that because, well, after our practice rounds on Tuesday or Wednesday, it suddenly dawned on me, oh, this is going to be fundamentally about the movies. So I set aside the information where I was memorizing things like, what's the birthday of the Weasley twins? It's April 1st, by the way.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But do you know what Hermione Granger's birthday is?
I don't remember.
It misses the fall by 2 days. It's September 19th. What's interesting is September the 19th is my birthday. So anyway, back to this main story here. I realized, oh, this is about the movies. And so what I had done is I put away all my crib notes and I just watched the movies. And I had seen that scene and thought, that's a very immature thing for Dudley to do. But that stuck in my mind. So yeah, I'm sorry. I'm kind of running on here. What else did you want to talk about?
Yeah. So, I mean, you answered a bunch of the questions that we kind of had for you already. Were there any other questions besides the first one that really stuck out to you or any experiences of being a frontline contestant?
Well, I remember, of course, the ones I missed.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
The first question in the final round of, you know, how many points did Hufflepuff have at the beginning? I sold as low. I said 352, and the answer was, I think, 382. Then there was a final golden snitch round, you know, where they do the fast questions worth 50 points each. We went in there with a 70-point lead, so I felt pretty good about that. And then I blew a 50-point question. That was the cursed child question about what creatures had not given warning about something. And I didn't know. I made a guess, and Lou put in what I guessed, and We blew it. So I dropped us down to having only a 20-point lead.
Yeah.
Just among the contestants, not yet counting the houses, we were only 20 points ahead. And the houses, as you know, ultimately came in with 250 points each. But if one of the houses had done differently, it could have turned out differently. There's an element of chance in that. And there always is in an athletic contest. There's a saying among, I forget whether it's football teams or baseball teams, but on any given day, any team can beat any other team.
Yep.
It's just the odds. We're ready for a rematch.
You're ready for a rematch. Okay, coming back for season two. See, I'm vying for a spot on the season two of this because I didn't even know there were auditions for this show. I just didn't even know. And I feel like I would really love to be a part of it just because, one, it sounds like you guys kind of created a fun little family almost from being part of there and have such wonderful new friendships along with some great experiences. And I kind of want that. I want to go to older people summer camp, Harry Potter summer camp.
Well, have you ever been to any of the Harry Potter conferences?
No, I haven't yet. I was actually going to try and go to the next one that they have in Boston because I'm up here in Massachusetts, but the ones that they have this year for LeakyCon are actually two dates where one, I will be in Finland, and the second one, I will be in Chicago running the Chicago Marathon. So I can't go to either one of them, even if I wanted to travel there.
Yeah, okay. But if you go to a conference, it's an amazing experience because you are in with, you know, 5,000 other people where you can say something like, I'll give you an example. There was a presentation being made once at a conference. They were talking about how the Harry Potter fandom had set the pattern for other fandoms in terms mm-hmm. of things you could reach out and try that were beyond the text itself, like all of the strange shipping relationships.
Yeah. So this is my favorite ship that I very much so stand behind. And if you'd like, I have a prop that goes with it. So my favorite relationship from the books is Squost, which for your reference is the squid and toast. This is the squid and toast. He sits on my head. He's holding his piece of toast. This is my favorite relationship, Squost. I love Squost.
Oh. Okay.
How do you feel about Squost?
Never heard of it before.
All right. I'm very much with you, David, that I am very confused by this.
David is looking at me. He's like, I don't know what just happened in front of me. I literally have no idea.
Okay, but the point is, when you are in this fan, such a group, everybody knows everything. So after this panel had made their presentations about how Harry Potter fandom had tried bold, new, exciting things, they asked for questions. And I said, well, I don't have a question, but I have a comment. What you've been talking about in this presentation reminds me of something once said by that great philosopher, Ginny Weasley. And so we pause while everybody laughs at that. I said, I remember her wise words when she said, the thing about growing up with Fred and George is you kind of get the idea that anything's possible if you have enough nerve. Mm-hmm. And the point is, the audience roared. Everybody knew the quote. They knew what it was from. They probably could have told you the chapter, you know.
Yeah.
When I'm doing my presentation on the 12 fail-safe ways to charm witches, I say, all right, I got a quote from you. And I bet you there's someone in this room who can identify the quote. Now, the Harry Potter books, a little over a million words. I've got a 3-word quote. Oh, well spotted. Who said that to whom and what were the context? And the answer is, oh, I think Melanie's getting it.
Is it Dumbledore?
No. Oh, well spotted. That's what Hermione says to Ron when Ron says, Hermione, Neville's right. You are a girl.
Oh, yeah. Did you know that, Mel?
I was thinking it might be Hermione. I wasn't 100% sure.
I can guarantee you in a room full of 20, 30, 40 people, there will be at least half a dozen people say, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they'll know. Yeah.
I am infamous in my presentations for another thing. I pepper the people with questions. Mm-hmm. And when they get the questions right, I throw a bit of chocolate at them.
No wonder you're a hit.
Yeah, I wonder why they love me on the basis of a 44-minute broadcast in which I probably wasn't on stage for more than 8 minutes. That's what I don't quite understand.
Yeah, I think you just have that personality that people just gravitate towards. And I think that's a big thing. And also just seeing the representation of someone who is older in the fandom, I think is really heartwarming to a lot of us. It's nice. It's very charming.
A lot of cred.
Yeah. The more gray hairs you have, the more knowledge you have inside that noggin of yours, right? Mm. But I think people just gravitate towards you, just feel a sense of how kind you are. And they really like that, because that's something we definitely need in the greater world right now, is just a greater sense of like feeling we're connected to each other, and kindness, and being able to be respectful and nice to each other. And I feel like on the whole that the trivia tournament was doing that. And that was my favorite thing about it, was that it was bringing the Harry Potter community back together on a larger scale in a positive teamwork style manner. I really appreciated that.
Well, I hope you're right.
I know I'm right.
I've got the perfect quote for you.
Okay, lay it on me.
My opinion may have changed, but does not change the fact that I am right.
Oh, yeah, that's a good... I'll have to use that one on my other podcast, too. Oh, yeah, I know a lot of situations where I can say that. Okay.
All right.
Just to round this up, could you still tell us what's the big thing you have taken away from this experience about the houses? You know, we kind of like to label the houses, but I think you have a very strong opinion on that.
As you know, my daughter, Esther, again, managed to record me eating pizza and talking with my mouth full.
Yeah.
And pontificating about why I chose to be Hufflepuff. Mm-hmm. A lot of people reacted to that, and people were wondering about the other houses too. And so I did some thinking about that. And I actually, I'll put in a small plug. I think I have a book coming out in the near future.
Oh, okay.
One of the things I wrote up is about a short chapter, 4 or 5 pages, in which I look at each of the houses and I say, what are the traits in this house that are good and positive? And then I look at how those traits can go wrong. Like, for instance, just to walk through one of them, Gryffindor, courage, right? Courage always. Mm-hmm. And courage is, by many people's reckoning, kind of the ultimate virtue. On the other hand, we look at Cormac McLagan. It takes courage to drink a quart of, what was it, poxy juice or something like that?
Yeah.
It is, of course, very dumb. Courage, you need more than courage.
Yeah.
These virtues can go wrong. Courage can can change into bullying. And we see some Gryffindors doing bullying. And likewise with each of the characteristics, they can go wrong. So my conclusion is that the house is something you need when you are still forming your identity. You need people who are like yourself to tell you that you're doing it right. But we actually learn, we actually grow when we start working with people who are not like ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so my reaction is that, yes, you need your house. You especially need it during those adolescent years. The gang you hung out with in high school, I hope you had a gang.
Sort of.
We had gang symbols. We had everything. We were just beating people up and then giving them cupcakes afterwards.
Well, you know what I mean.
As Hufflepuff too.
Your group, your clique, whatever.
Yeah.
But then when you grow up, you need to move out beyond that. There's a question I posted. If you didn't know that Dumbledore had been in Gryffindor and you had only his behavior to judge from, what house would you put him in?
Ravenclaw or Slytherin. Probably Slytherin.
I would say Ravenclaw.
I say he's a Slytherclaw. He's very ambitious and he's very self-serving when it comes down to everything. But he also is extremely
knowledgeable
and like very detail oriented.
Mm. So my reaction on the houses is that it's a set of virtues, but when we become adults, we need to understand that there are limitations to those virtues and there are virtues from other houses that we occasionally need to appropriate. So you don't exactly outgrow your house, but you learn to enlarge your behaviors, something like that.
Okay, so I think we might finish up the conversation and jump over into our game.
Yeah, thank you, David, for all that information. That was really interesting to hear. And obviously you have so many amazing stories.
Yeah.
It was so nice to hear a lot of them. Okay, so what we are going to do next is we're going to play the game that we play with all of our guests called Are You Puffin' Kidding Me? And this is the game where each person playing the game tells one statement to the rest of the group, and everyone who is not telling a statement gets to ask one question of the person giving the statement. So you can either lie or tell the truth. If you would like to go first, David, we would like to hand it over to you because we give that opportunity to all of our guests. But if not, Mel or I will go first.
Why don't you two go first?
Okay. Do you have anything you thought of, Mel? Because I don't have anything in my brain yet.
I actually do.
Okay.
So I am a collector of the Harry Potter books, and I have the illustrated editions right up here on my shelves. But I have actually never fully read or looked through them, even though I have them since several years in my shelves.
I want to say this is true because I know you have many books like that. And I know I also have done the same exact thing where I have books on my shelves that I have not read that are Harry Potter related or Fantastic Beasts related. And I just haven't gotten there yet. I don't have a question for you, Mel. I just think you're telling the truth. What do you think, David? You think she's telling the truth or she's puffing with us?
One question.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
In what language are these books?
In German and English.
Okay, I think she's telling the truth.
Okay, Mel, what is the verdict here?
I am very much ashamed to say that it is true.
Aha, I knew it was true because I do the exact same thing. I order all these books and I'm like, I'm going to read them now. And then they just sit there for years and they never get touched.
And they are so beautiful, but I just, for some reason, still haven't gone fully through them. I have actually one or two of them I haven't even opened. And I don't know why. I should. Okay, but yeah, that was a point for both of you. That was, I think, very easy.
Okay. David, would you like to go next or would you like me to go next?
I'll go next.
Okay.
I attended a virtual Harry Potter conference in October after I'd made the show in afternoon. And there was a woman at the conference who knew I had been on the show and who knew that Hufflepuffs had won. And we didn't tell a soul.
Ooh, interesting.
How did she know that Hufflepuffs have won? What is your connection?
She was in the audience.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember seeing her at all in the audience?
Yes.
I do. Okay. Since this is a virtual event, I'm feeling like this is probably true. If it was like an in-person event, I would be much more skeptical because we don't know where this woman came from. And obviously you don't live in LA where they filmed it. And I'm assuming most of the people who were in the audience were just people who lived in the area who were Harry Potter fans. That's my best guess. I don't know. I want to say that this is true.
Yeah, I think also it's true. And it would probably would have been a very funny moment to both of you that you had this secret and you didn't tell anyone.
Yeah.
I think it's true.
Luke was very good at keeping the secret.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what is the verdict, David?
It is true.
Yay!
Okay.
There's a woman who's been active in Harry Potter academic conferences.
Uh-huh.
Louise Freeman is her name. And she was in the audience, and I didn't see her at first, but then she called to me during one of the breaks, and I went over and spoke with her. I didn't at first recognize her.
Oh, okay.
But she and John Granger actually did an interview with me.
Oh, how cool.
Yeah, back right after the first show had come out.
Oh, wow. That must have been so much fun for you.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, that's exciting. Okay. Well, I guess that just leaves me then.
Yeah.
My statement is that when I was a kid, my favorite color used to be green, and I only changed it to purple because my friend Mary said her favorite color was purple.
How old were you when you did this?
Probably like 8, 9, somewhere in there. I can remember the exact moment, but I can't remember exactly how old I was.
I think we have talked about this before.
Have we?
That you at least liked the color because of someone else.
Was my favorite color green? Was it a different color? I don't know.
I think since you definitely know that green is my favorite color.
I do know that.
That you would have said something about that it used to be yours.
It's a mystery.
Was this friend of yours just so cool that you thought that, oh yeah, I must like this color too because she likes it?
Pretty much,
it.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you just stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
What do we think, David? Is this true or not?
I think it's not true. It's one of those things that's kind of half true. I believe she switched her colors, but I believe her favorite color was not previously green. I think it was something else.
Am I wrong on a technicality? Who knows? This is for you to decide, Melanie. Step up to the plate, make a decision.
I think I'm going with David on this one, and I say it's false.
Well, joke's on both of you. It's true.
No,
my favorite color was green because I used to love Buttercup the Powerpuff Girl, and then literally I was at my friend Mary's house, and she's like, my favorite color is purple, and I thought she was the coolest person in the entire world. And so I was like, my favorite color is purple too, and I'd never changed it past them. I can remember literally the exact moment that happened, and I just like stuck with purple, and it's just been my favorite color literally since I was like 7 or 8 years old.
Okay.
So with that, the new stand on the tally is the guests continuously leading with 29 points, Juliana in second place with 19 points, and I am on third place with 14 points.
Awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today. This has been so fun to chat with you. We were so excited to adopt you as our Hufflepuff grandpa because we have a Huffle Nan on our podcast already, Mella, and now we have a Huffle grandpa. And we're very excited to kind of complete our family tree, you know?
Okay.
But we're so thankful you joined us. But if people want to find out what you're up to, I know you kind of hinted to us that you may or may not be coming out with some written text sometime soon. If you want to let people know about that and any of your social media stuff, you can do so right now.
Oh, okay. Well, the book is still under development, but my social media contact name is David the Hufflepuff, all written together is one thing, except on Twitter, where it's David the Huffle, because there's a limit of like, I think, 13 letters. So it's David Hufflepuff as much as you can get in to a Twitter name. I am still learning how to use social media, but I do have an Instagram account. I do have a TikTok account, and I am trying to generate stuff to go in there. But it's been a learning experience for me.
Yeah, it's a learning experience for us, too. And we kind of grew up with it.
Okay.
And thank you so much to talk German with me. That was so nice.
Yeah, you definitely made Mel's day.
Yes.
Geht was kein Deutscher in Finland?
Doch, schon. Und viele sprechen hier auch ein bisschen Deutsch. Aber ich habe eine Freundin aus Deutschland hier und eine andere, die aus Österreich kommt und die ist gerade weggezogen. Also ich habe nicht so viele, mit denen ich hier Deutsch rede. Nur Englisch und Finnisch.
Oh, schade.
Ja, sehr schade.
She's saying that there's only a couple of friends who speak German in the area, and that's too bad.
Ah, I know Deutschland was Finland. Deutschland is German? German.
Germany, yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It was really nice.
Yeah.
And then we had a little oopsie and forgot to actually record our contacts. So I am going to take over this task for this episode. Sorry, Juliana. So if you want to find us, you can listen to us on all platforms podcasts are found. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at PuffCastPod. Facebook at facebook.com/puffcast. We are also on TikTok at puffcast. You can email us at puffcastpod@gmail.com. If you support us on Patreon, you can get exclusive benefits like bloopers, bonus episodes, access to Buttercup's tea room. We are still working on our Discord. I'm sorry, it is going to come soon. There will be also stickers for you and so much more. We are also donating $1 to charity for each patron we have each month, and if you want to support that, please join us over there. You can also rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. If you leave us a review, we will read it here on the show, and again, Juliana will send you a sticker and whatever else she finds in her lovely apartment. You can leave us a 5-star rating on Spotify. That will help us as well. So thank you so much for listening, and until next time, stay puffy, and you know what's coming, right? Badger on!